the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Actually, let me say Happy New Year.
Happy New Year!
Right over here on my right.
Yeah, what's so happy
about?
We've
got the one and only engineer extraordinaire, Bobby Sommerfeld.
Hello!
That's me, and don't you forget it.
Oh, Mike. Hello! Happy New Year!
And next to him, we have the guru of sounds.
Hello!
Sorry, Scott, I have to reboot him.
Scott Gershon.
Hi.
And next to him, we've got the trailer man, the man who does many whooshes, swooshes, and big music, Brandon Birdseye.
Hello.
And over here on the left, we've got the rock, the consistent, the one and only Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike. I like the Iron Man of the podcast.
Okay, the Iron Man of the podcast.
Hello.
Your words, we are the?
Oh, we are. No, I don't want to say it because someone's going to use it. It's too good. We got to trademark it first. We have a name for ourselves, which you'll hear about next time.
Wow. I'm looking forward
to that. And we have costumes as well to go with it.
Yeah, superhero costumes.
Trevor Sonovan?
And joining us today, we have the honor and the privilege to have with us a guest and a friend of Rob's. Rob, why don't you introduce him?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Dun, 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 dun.
Actually, it's mostly gentlemen.
But well,
the few ladies we do appreciate. Yes, we have with us Wolfgang Kundris, creator of Nuendo and many other amazing pieces of software. Say hello to the nice people, Wolfgang.
Hello.
Hello. There you go.
Actually, you know what? I like when you call them the father of Nuendo and the uncle of Cubase.
Yes. Well, I met Wolfgang back when he was working, Cubase was the current Steinberg product, and they did a lot of customization for Stevie and made it very non-visual, and Wolfgang just did awesome things that no other software engineer was doing at the time.
And who introduced you to Cubase?
I don't recall.
Is that so? Did you?
I did.
Yes, Scott did.
He was into some bizarre PC program that nobody used. Wow.
And as a result, I drove Wolfgang crazy for years.
We're still good friends.
Yeah, and we're still friends.
Well, Wolfgang, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk about your newest project a little bit later on the podcast.
But right.
Appreciate you joining us. Also, we have with us sitting in today is independent sound designer Steve Tishar.
Hey, how y'all doing?
And Steve, you do sound design for games?
For video games and feature films, yeah.
And feature.
Yeah.
And you've worked with Scott on some
podcasts? I worked with Scott on, I think it was Chronicles of Riddick we did together.
Yeah, the video game, yeah.
The video game?
Yeah.
And also some, I can't remember, was the Matrix? Some kind of animation thing we did together.
Anime?
I think it was an anime, yeah.
I think, the Riddick anime.
Yeah, the Riddick anime, that's it, actually, yeah.
That's cool. Well, we're going to have to dig a little bit into that later on and talk a little bit about your sound design and some of the tools that you use and what you do and some of the projects that you can't talk about that you're working on. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, really.
I can't talk. 5 minutes of silence.
I do something really cool, but I can't talk about it.
That's right. I got to come up with the sound, and it was really hard, so... this is our pre-NAMM show, and we're actually going to get this posted before NAMM.
Are we?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's pretty good going then, because NAMM is yesterday.
So before we talk about anything, let's talk about NAMM. First of all, how many guys are going? I know I'm going to be there. Bobby going to be there. Scott, you going to be there?
Yeah.
Brandon?
No NAMM.
Brandon's going to be working.
No NAMM? Oh.
Steve, you going to be there?
Yeah, either Friday or Saturday.
All right. And we know Wolfgang.
All 5 days.
Yes. Rob will be there.
Absolutely.
You mean you're not going down for at least 2 or 3?
No.
He's like,
3-4 hours is enough now for me.
Oh, yeah.
The NAMM show is actually, for this podcast, what most people don't know is the NAMM show was the kind of the birth of this podcast, because for the longest time, I would only see Rob at the NAMM show. So at least once a year, I could talk to Rob because I'd see him at the NAMM show.
That's NAMM family.
And, exactly.
The NAMM fan.
There's people
it's
that NAMM-ly. You
it's
only
our
see, yeah. And you finish and continue conversations that you had at the last NAMM show.
Well, what would happen is we would go out with, as a friend of ours, actually, Larry Jopa, the president of API, he would go with us and we'd bring different people to dinner and we'd have really great conversations. And I was thinking, you know, that might make a decent podcast with all the different tech talk that we would get into and stuff. And it was just fun listening.
And we've done 50 great shows since then. And 72 total, right?
No, this is show 78.
78?
Wow. 78. I'm feeling really old at this point.
This is show number 78, yep.
Impressive.
So NAMM is really special. And I don't know about you, but there seems to be a really good buzz about this year's NAMM. I mean, there's a lot of optimism. Last year was a little cautious because of the way the economy is, but I think people are, you know, looking at the economy at least in a little bit better light.
I think when people are anxious because everybody's in like 2x2 booths at this point.
Yeah. there's going to be some big booths, but yeah, it's you just don't hear a lot about you know, the small size of NAMM or the people worrying about, hey, are people going to be there and what vendors are going to be there. What vendors aren't. Wolfgang, I know you're working with Presonus. You guys have a pretty decent booth? You have a pretty big booth?
Yeah, actually, Presonus is probably the only company that got a bigger booth this
year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right next to DigiDesign.
Wow.
The space that they made available, basically.
Wow. Really?
That's a good sign.
That's a really good sign.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Well, I do know Presonus, I mean, that is a company that's growing. You just see them every year. They're just coming out with new product.
Yeah.
And they used to, let's be honest, when, you know, a few years ago when you talked about Presonus, you weren't exactly talking about it in a favorable light, but lately, you know, their products have been coming out and they've been kind of kicking butt and getting great reviews, you know, especially the interfaces that are coming out. So that's great. That's great that Presonus is getting big. Rob, you going to be doing any demos over there?
I'm going to be doing some Steinberg demos, mostly showing the new Grand Piano plugin and just talking about the usual stuff, MIDI and audio and recording and all that stuff.
Now, I'm going to let people in since this is going out before NAMM Show. If you get a chance, you got to see a Rob demo because Rob makes some of the coolest music on his demos. I remember one time.
And I take it with me. It is not left on the hard drive. That's not
true. One time you came up with this funkiest little riff when you were doing Hypersonic 2. You were doing a demo for it. I don't remember. It was like 3 NAMMs ago. You were just.
Between the two of us, you were the one paying attention. I don't know if you remember. Well, I try to make each demo different because otherwise I look bored and I'm not a good actor. So if I am bored, I look bored and I just try to keep it interesting.
No, it is. It's really interesting.
It's amazing he can play a whole drum kit with his left hand.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you got to.
It's
astounding. Yeah. No, he was funking out up there. I was definitely impressed.
Well, you know, stay tuned in the next few days. It's going to be the same exact stuff. Except I don't know that I'm going to be playing any drums this year. I think it's all about piano, so I'm going to be whipping out just some classical chops. You
know. Really?
It'll be fun.
A little Manilow action. And
oh, maybe. Big time.
Yeah, all the time.
That's cool.
Should be fun.
Anybody else ever demo there? Are you going to, Scott, you ever demo? Or you?
I demoed, yeah. But not this time. I'm just going to go watch. I do the NAMM shuffle, which means you walk a foot, you talk to somebody
right
for about a half hour. Then you walk another foot, and you talk to somebody for about a half hour.
There is nothing more, I will say, there is nothing more frustrating in life than going to a NAMM show with Scott and expecting to hang with him and make any progress through the show. Because 6 hours into it, you'll realize you've made it 10 feet from the front door. You've seen absolutely nothing except a whole bunch of people. You have no idea who they are, but he's thrilled to see them. And the best thing is to set up a meeting place afterwards.
I met you, Bobby, at a NAMM show.
Did you?
We went with Paigey.
Ah,
years ago,
right.
That's the first time I met you.
That's
was at
exactly
a NAMM
right.
show.
God, that is a good memory.
Wow, a little NAMM love right there.
A little NAMMage. A little NAMMage.
Yeah, it was yeah. You know, and that was the same thing.
I wasn't
Bobby.
Working there. We were just hanging around. But
yeah,
I was with Paigey, I think.
And I think we met Richard Gamson there.
Dave Gamson, yeah.
Gamson from
Scritti
Police.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and exactly.
I think that's the first time we hung out. That was actually pretty cool. I was thinking, boy, that Bobby, he's kind of really long-winded. No, I'm just kidding.
That's what you thought. Well-winded.
No. No, it was great. But the thing with Bobby is he goes to those places and he can only do 10 feet without meeting somebody.
Yeah.
You were just meeting everybody left and right.
The funny part
I don't
is...
get out much.
So, you know, if we go back to back, we can
just
like magnets and just watch iron suck to us, you know?
Usually, each year I end up bringing Stevie Wonder around the show.
Right.
And the funny part is, I mean, it's a mob scene because there's always a billion people around. But when I'm bringing him around is usually when I get to see the most stuff and talk to the most people. Because, for one thing, everybody knows where we are. Everybody congregates around. I basically just lay out with the security of the place where we want to go and what we want to check out. And they have all these paths cleared. And so it really... We make a really good trade show team because we can get through the entire show, every single hall, usually in a few hours, and actually learn stuff and check out new product, and it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, I will say, watching you at the NAMM show, it's an art, because what Rob does is he's leading Stevie to one booth, he's looking out for the next booth so that when Steve's at that booth, you know,
yeah, I'm usually trying to figure out the next one.
You're either at the next one or you're figuring out the next one.
They have a large shopping cart behind them. That's like, oh, I like that one. Take that one.
There's some of that. But think about it this way. Like, if you figure how many people recognize Scott at a NAMM show, and that's almost overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, the number of people who recognize Stevie, I mean, the guys parking the cars are running, you know.
Yeah.
From across the way with their, you know, phones to take pictures and stuff. It becomes a zoo. And I will say the Anaheim, the security people and the whole venue down there, they know how to deal with it. They get so many celebrities in at each NAMM show, and they've got it down to a science.
Although Steve does pack quite the crowd, though. I mean, he's, you know, you see some of the other crowds because there's a lot of celebrities.
It's not subtle with the entourage.
Yeah, Steve, like, you know, they're around the booth, and they're like three rows, you know, around whatever booth.
Oh, it's usually, thousands of people around. But we'll do a recap after the show to say what happened. I don't even know 100%. That he'll be there. I know he's been traveling, but we will see.
Oh, so he may not come?
We never know. Stay tuned.
You can tell because Rob goes, you know, you'll see Rob. Oh, Stevie just called, and he's coming in like 30 minutes, and there goes Rob.
Well, usually the only time I can be sure of when he won't be there is exactly when he says he will. That doesn't mean he won't get there eventually.
Anyhow, if you're heading out to NAMM, you can see if you can hunt one of us down, and the easiest way is... look for Stevie Wonder, and you'll see Rob.
And by the way, this is the year we get the word out at NAMM about this podcast. We've got a pretty good following, but we need to be spreading the word.
We should get shirts.
We should have
flyers.
We all want to wear shirts.
Or hats.
Hell no.
Okay, we'll do that.
Orange, you know, orange with yellow writing, you know, and yellow pants. You know.
I think not.
Well, hey, if you're at the NAMM show, I'm going to be over at the API booth. I'll be working that for
I'll
most
come and
of
see
the show.
You.
Cool.
So,
I'm going to be at my friend of mine and I, he started a music sample library last year. Andrew and his company is called Audio Bro. And I'm going to be hanging out there. He's got me the pass, basically. I'm going to go hang out there, and he's going to be showing off his new library. So
and give him a plug. What's the library called?
Yeah, and the library is called LA Scoring Strings.
Which is doing very well.
It's doing very nicely.
And we'll have him on as a guest eventually.
We should, because that's actually, that would be something really fascinating to talk about. How to put together a sample library, the logistics of putting together a sample library. It's not easy.
It's for Contact. Yeah, it's Contact. We started together, and halfway through I bailed out because it was just such a lot of work and he had more time. And basically it took him a long time to finish. It was just a mammoth amount of work, and he's doing really well. Now we're starting, and he and I are doing the next library together. And that's why I'm over there doing, you've got to do the hang. The Hangamaroonie.
The Hangamaroonie. All right, well, so if you're going to NAMM show, just, you know, look around, and if you see one of us, say hey. And if you don't see any of us, don't say hey.
Or you could say hey.
Well, let's move on. First of all, I hope everybody had a pleasant holiday season. Anybody get any good gifts, any good musical gifts you can talk about? I will. I'll say one thing. I got a small little netbook computer from Toshiba. That's pretty awesome. And I know, like, I need another computer.
Yeah, like you need another computer.
But it was, it's pretty awesome, and it's a netbook. And I went online, and I started downloading a lot of music programs, a lot of them that are optimized for smaller CPUs and stuff. And it's pretty cool. There's a lot out there. So, you know, if you're out there listening and you want to get into music, don't be afraid to start on your netbook.
Are you going to stand in line for the new Apple tablet?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, he is. Oh, please.
No.
Come on.
This is not going to come out. It's not going to be a tablet. It's going to be something totally different because Apple's not that obvious. But yeah, so that was, you know, but getting back to the subject, that was kind of cool. And I later on we're going to do a podcast where we're going to talk about some of these software programs that are out there. But because there's a lot of great ways to get into music now, especially with the price point of a netbook coming down, you know, the sub $300 range. You can do some really cool stuff on just some really inexpensive tools. And so I just wanted to let people know that.
Guitars are cheaper, too. Guitars are about $200 for a really good guitar. Learn to play guitar. That's another way of getting into music.
Actually, you know what I was looking at?
Strange thinking.
I haven't bought it, but the 11 rack.
The 11 looks cool.
No, the 11 rack.
Yeah.
And I've got all these guitar processors. I've got Native Instruments. I've got GTR3. And it's just fascinating to see how they're similar, how they're different, and... if you don't have one, the 11 rack is kind of cool for all the things you can do, built-in reamping off the USB port, and it's a pretty cool. Because then when you come in, you go in, you figure out what you want software-wise, that gives you a stereo track.
Why don't you tell people what the 11 rack
is by DigiDesign, and it is a guitar amp simulator with microphone placement, the whole bit. So if you, let's say, lay down a guitar track and you really like it, it goes down to stereo. You can also, via the USB port, do a mono dry signal all at the same time.
Okay.
Then if you want to go reamp, you hit a button, and it starts reamping, and you can change the sound. Okay. It's just that simple. You can choose where you want the microphone, what kind of room, what kind of mics do you want, what kind of amp do you want, what kind of pedals. What's different, I think, between the 11 plug-in and the 11 rack is that the rack comes in with a whole bunch of stomp pedals built into it. And you can map them. You can map them before the amp, after the amp. You can then chain it. You can put it. You can put the 11 rack against a real amp. So you can say, give it to me as my preamp, put it through an amp, and then reamp it that way.
And
it's got all the outputs for it, which is nice.
Throughput is not play. You can't. It's a non-real-time process, though, right? You couldn't play through it.
Absolutely.
It?
No, you can't. So what's neat is if you're doing a recording, you really like the presets you've created, you can then save that preset, take the rack out, put it on your live rig, right, and then go out and just play.
Mic up.
Right. So it could be any kind of processor that you want. And what I like is that they have all the outputs are built via USB. They've got one that's a direct amp output. You got balanced outputs, you got digital outputs if you want to go digitally.
So it's a piece of hardware then?
Oh, it's a piece of hardware.
Oh, I get you.
That's got the 11 plug it.
I thought you were doing a bit about the software.
Okay. And it's also got an impedance matcher built into it that they tell that no matter what guitar you have, it'll match the impedance to get the most out of the guitar. That
front end and back, or not back end.
Well, you plug in the guitar in.
This guitar you speak of, that's like Rock Band without the DSP, right?
See, I'm waiting for Rock Band to actually be a real instrument that you could play. You got a trumpet, you got three vowels.
Right. I've got a friend who has exactly that. He's currently developing.
I mean, I know we changed those subjects here, don't we? Why can't you take the controller and actually make it into an instrument?
And play four notes? I guess you could play 16 notes.
Well, look at the trumpet. I mean, there's ways that you can change octaves.
Yeah, but a guitar doesn't have plumbing. I mean, in a trumpet, you're actually changing the length of pipe and the way the harmonics work.
Well, the one thing that I will say that Rock Band will teach you is rhythm. You know, you can just you have to.
So will punching someone.
No, but that's half the battle. I mean, come
but
on.
But drums are a great. You're hitting all
the drums. Absolutely,
drums are drums.
My son learned how to play drums on Rock Band,
drums are the closest thing to real playing.
Yeah, it's only like 12 milliseconds off. No, 25. Well,
no, but you know what?
You get
your coordination to do your eighth notes on your hi hat, and do your kick and your.
It's
snare.
a lot more realistic than playing guitar is compared
absolutely.
To Rock Band.
Yeah, by far. Anyhow, wow, we went out there. Let's come back. Bring it back.
But, we were talking about the 11, yeah.
No, but the 11 actually, the other thing, you know, runs Pro Tools, and that's good. You can use it as an interface.
Yeah.
And we'll have to check that out over at NAMM.
Yeah, I've checked out all these software guitar modelers, and it's been everything from Logic. I've checked them all. I've got them all.
But even the new Logic?
I got
9?
The Logic too. I got Logic 9.
And how do you compare that between that and 11?
I find that 11 is a guitar amp in its simplicity. A lot of times when I had a Fender or a Marshall, I said, wow, that's great sound. Now I want to put an Eventide, I want to put reverb on it, and I want to get that studio sound, not just the guitar sound.
Right.
I find 11 is a lot more like, bam, there's the amp. Whatever it is, that's the amp on the software side. I find that Logic 9 goes maybe a little step further than that.
Right.
I find GTR3, because it has the dual amps,
right,
you can sit there and actually have two different amps, one for the left, one for the right, and all of a sudden, and decide what kind of plugins you want, stomp boxes you want. That kind of sounds a little more processed, like you would imagine an end recording to sound like. And then I found Native Instruments goes even further, and while you may not get all the nuances out of the Native Instrument, it just has cool presets, so you can bam, hit it, and all of a sudden you got that rocking sound. But if you put three different guitars against, I'm going to probably kill me on this, but if you put three different instruments against Native Instruments, the subtleties between them seem to be a little bit less.
Hmm.
But the presets, it depends on what preset you use.
Wow.
But it's a great, I mean, they're all great sound and they're all good for something.
Wow. Well, that's cool. There you go. What do you know? A little roundup of all the software guitar amps out there and simulators. Cool. I'm going to have to check out those really quick. If you're a keyboard player, which one of those would you recommend if you wanted to process your keyboards through them?
I mean, all of them would do it. I think what I've started using is GTR3 and maybe the Native Instruments for sound design and just things. You can put vocals. Just
right,
because they're a little more processed.
Right.
And there's a little more refinement, studio-esque.
Right. Because I find sometimes guitar amp simulators that sound really good on guitar don't necessarily sound really good with keyboard sounds and other sounds you want to process. And the ones that sound not so good on guitar actually sound really great on some of the keyboard and stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I use Guitar Rig on keyboards and synth sounds constantly.
Yeah.
Well, I find like if you get a really good smooth distortion sound, run it through a reverb, and then hold a really great analog-y, like sine wavy type of tone, you get some amazing distortion that can just last forever and not break up on the tail, you know, still kind of have that smooth sound. It, like the Peter Gabriel, like long reverbed distortion. And that, you know, that's priceless, you know, on guitars and stuff. Or if you want to add a little, like a clav and you throw it in there, and, you know, clavs have a little bit of crunch in the back end anyhow, but you throw it through a one of those guitar simulators and put just a little bit more and you get some pretty cool sounds.
But even the Roland Jazz Chorus on the Guitar Rig is kind of cool because it has a chorusing effect that nobody else has. It's got the stereo kind of, it's just...
And they do that well? I love the Jazz Chorus.
Because I have a Jazz Chorus in my studio.
Mine got, you know, I did with mine Jazz Chorus the sidetrack, JC-120, I got it in a flight case.
Yeah.
I left it outside, at the side of my house, I forgot to put it up, stored away. And I literally found it like 4 years later. It was completely ruined.
Rob, you use any guitar amp simulators? Well, you got probably the real guitar amps.
Well, we have some of the real amps, but we use all these same simulators.
On your keyboards?
On keyboards as well as guitar. I mean, there's no rule about which one is best. It's you try them all and see what sounds good at the moment.
I mean, for $300, own them all. I mean, $1,000, $1,200 gets you everything.
Wow. That's kind of cool. I like where this went. I like this whole guitar simulator stuff because it's a really good tool that not a lot of people use to get some more bang from your buck when you...
What if you're getting sick of your sample library? It's a way to breathe some new life into it.
Oh, there's nothing like running a loop that just sounds ridiculous on its own, and you throw it through your guitar simulator.
And then it's cool.
Distorted and cool. Well, hey, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break right now because on the backside, we're going to talk to Wolfgang because we're going to talk a little bit about software. And then later on, we're going to visit with Steve and sound design. So we're going to take a break now, and we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we actually were talking about guitars and guitar rigs.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty interesting. But we're going to bring it back down to something that's really near and dear to my heart. We're going to talk a little bit about software. And joining us is Wolfgang, who is the father innuendo. And first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about your programming history and what even made you start with your, you know, I don't know, was Nuendo your first program?
Oh, there was life before Nuendo.
You want the long story or the short story?
Whichever story you want to start.
I started writing computer software in 1987. 6 months later, I joined Steinberg. That was when Pro 24 was a big seller for them. At the same time, Steinberg was aware that Pro 24 could not last very long and that the next software would be a team effort. So they put together a team of several people, Stefan Scheffler, Werner Kracht, Charlie Steinberg and me, and shortly after Michaelis. Joined the team, so we were five people initially writing version 1.0 of Cubase on the Atari ST then.
Wow.
It worked well too.
Yeah, it did.
And so I, after 1.0 was out, I was finally able to write Macintosh software, so my job was porting Cubase from the Atari to the Macintosh. That was 1989 when that appeared on the market, oh. I think. And then the PC came, Windows 3.0, actually made Windows usable and a viable option.
Right.
And so, and it was my turn again to port the software. And,
wow.
Having done that three times, and having learned all the bitter lessons, what you can do wrong when you move software between different platforms, I was in a situation where I could start from scratch and basically rewrite everything that Steinberg had in terms of technology. I found a brilliant partner then, a young guy who came straight from university, and we basically laid the foundation for what then became Nuendo. It was a long journey because it was planned that this code base would replace Cubase.
You know, I've always wondered and that. I've always wondered
so
if it was.
That was the mission from the beginning, but then happened VST. And suddenly Cubase had new life and was a totally different thing and
right.
booming product for Steinberg. So Nuendo was sidelined by that more or less. And it took us like 5 years before we were able to bring all the missing features from the Cubase code base to come up with Cubase SX then.
Right.
And, that was a point where the circle was complete for me, and I lost interest. Management changed at Steinberg,
yeah.
and the company grew up to become more corporate and more departmental. And so I dropped out of that 2001, 2002. Then I took a long break. I was through the acquisition of Steinberg in the position that I could go on without working for a while. And so I did that, could actually start using Cubase, make music with it. And that was about 4 years ago when I started to get interested in working again.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky to meet Jim Odom from Prisonos.
Okay.
And I partnered with Matthias, who I met at Steinberg, who I hired when I was there in a responsible position. And we started from scratch, basically. This time I could apply my knowledge from the user perspective, because up to that point, I was always playing with the software, but not really intensively. And so by being a user for during these years, I learned a lot about workflow and what needs to be quick and easy and so on. And so the mission was to create a new program then and basically redefine ease of use.
I got you. Now, when you started, were you worried that the market was so saturated? Because, quite frankly, you know, that would scare me trying to come up with a DAW with all the DAWs that are out there. And you've got things like Ableton, and you've got on one hand, and you've got
it right this time.
I've been practicing my Ableton.
Ableton.
and you got all, you know, the new Logic, and you've got even Cubase making a comeback and Pro Tools with that. I mean, was that must have been a scary prospect, you know, trying to find where your place is going to go.
Yes, it was certainly something like this, but to be honest, there was a company that had a very reasonable interest in getting software into their product portfolio just to be able to offer solutions. And they had enough, they gave us enough funding to write a reasonable program. And what's interesting is in the beginning we were more after something simple, more for beginners, and it has grown. And with the reception by people, we've seen that there's actually a lot that can be done differently and can be changed and can be better to make music more fun. Because, to be honest, to make music, you don't need a lot. I mean, you need a certain level of functionality. You need your instrument that needs to have the expressive dimensions that right. you need. And the computer program right. has to be able to capture that. But it's not that much, and it's not the million functions that you really need. And so coming up with a basic set of functions that are implemented very well, things that you use all the time, make them easy and fluent, and so that you don't have to think when you make music, that did and into a program, into a product that's, I think, has a chance in the marketplace.
Now, let me ask you just to, I actually looked at Studio One. I saw it. I'm really impressed with the user interface, and it looked like from the very beginning, that looked like, obviously, from what you're saying, one of the things was you wanted to make the user experience, you know, like number one priority. Tell us a little bit about Studio One and how it's a little different and what your thought process was behind it.
So, yeah, what is different? What we wanted is an end-to-end solution for producing music. One of the trends we could see is that more and more musicians are in the situation that they have to finalize their music, master their music, and actually bring it into a state where they can release it on MySpace and so on. So we wanted to include the mastering part in the software. And so Studio One has these two parts, so the song part and the project part. And it's actually quite nice how the project part is linked to the song part. It tracks changes. The project knows when a song has been changed and the master mixdown needs to be updated, which is a tedious process that you need to go through when you finish a CD. You go between mastering and mixing, at least when it's the same person. It's a tedious process, so we wanted to make that easy. And so
if you mix something, you can, when you go back to the song, it will update with your master.
Yeah, it will keep track of the changes. It knows that the master file is outdated, and it will then recreate it.
Wow.
And what kind of plugins does it support?
It supports VST, audio units, and VST3, actually. And we've got our own format. Another thing that we've seen is that people have a lot of content on their hard drives.
Right.
And that material was hard to get into the software. At least the Cubase versions that I used, it was always a pain to get stuff into it. So was pretty clear we wanted to have a preview player that syncs your loops to the song. But another thinking was when I have my hard drive, I have a folder, there's all my stuff in there. I know how it looks like. It's probably chaotic and maybe only 70% in order, but it's a structure that I know. And so I actually only need to see that structure. I don't need any fancy tagging or databasing if I see the folder like I used to it.
So. Yeah, that's a really good point, because when you have to database something, you always fall behind. You always forget to update your databases.
And it doesn't tell you where it's at. You know, sometimes when you're in a database and you just see a bunch of things that it grabs from all different folders and it organizes it with you, it's, you know,
never feel like you can trust it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big.
It's like it puts a filter on yourself.
Yeah,
very much so.
But I mean, something like this is useful to have, but it's just not been a priority for the first version. And sure. We know that lots of what you need is there with a simple file browser that has a preview player that syncs. Done. Things like that, drag and drop, creating a track and putting an instrument onto it has been pain. Now you go in Studio One, you go in the browser, you look at the preset you want, you drag it onto your arrangement, get the instrument, the track, record enable, ready to play. Things like that.
Sounds fantastic.
Can you lock QuickTime to it?
Not yet. Actually, I had a list of things we don't want to do.
You've got to face your battles.
That's the first thing I asked. What about video support?
Well, what's interesting is for projects. If people were to use, let's say, Pro Tools, and there's some plugins that exist that don't exist in RTAS or TDM, but exist like in AU, such as Morph. You've got to find another program that will play VST and AU plugins. And sometimes it's nice to have a second system, even within the same computer, that you can open up really quick, utilize all the cool instruments and plugins in an AU format, and be able to, you know...
bounce it down.
Well, one thing I think that we need to talk a little bit about, though, and when I was watching the video demo online, was how well that drag and drop really works, because it was amazing when you see them open up and you just grab whatever you want as far as your VST or your preset, and you put it on the window, and boom, it's there. It's all ready to go. You don't have to worry about the routing. You don't have to worry about all that. And the other thing, too, is the first page when you start the program, that's brilliant. It has like a almost like a website type of feel. You don't launch into necessarily all the guts. You launch into a place that feels like this is where I want to launch. Do I want to work on something? Do I want to master? Yeah, it's that is brilliant.
If you close the song, you're not back on the desktop.
Yeah.
You're in your lounge, start page.
It's really cool, and if you have connectivity, you're hooked up to the internet, and it will tell you, like, there's a little news
feed. There's an RSS feed.
Yeah, that just makes so much sense. It's like you're starting your own little...
When updates become available, we put it on the RSS feed.
I really thought that was just a brilliant programming thing, and I'm thinking it's so easy. You wonder why other people don't.
It's just modern.
Do that.
It's
yeah.
It's modern, really.
Yeah.
All the other programs do it, just no audio programs. Most audio programs are pretty out of date.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a place to start. You know, and I like the way you can move around, and I just think that is pretty brilliant. The way you get in and out of it. Let me ask you a question. To get it up and running, were you like? Did they have to pull the all-nighters because you had the launch date and you knew you were going to start there and you kept on finding bugs, or was it a relatively easy launch period? How was the last couple weeks before you launched?
Oh, actually, Prisonus is a very good company to work with because people understand that development takes time and that sometimes it's hard to predict when something's really ready. So it has been a theme, when it's ready, it's ready, or it's ready when it's ready. So, and we were not in a hurry to rush it out.
Rush it out and get a bad name as well, because that's what so many people do.
So we had a very good beta test phase. Actually, was surprised the quality of people that showed up and the background also, because our initial mission was writing a beginner's software, but this one appealed to a lot of professionals, people who ditched Sonar for it, for instance, and just because the fun to use it. So we had 3 months intense testing with a good beta tester group and in-house testing. It was pretty smooth.
Now, let me ask you a question about that, because I know there's a lot of listeners and a lot of people, they always want to be beta testers, and they always, you know, everybody, it seems like whenever there's an open call for beta testers, if you don't do it the day that you find out about it, it's going to be closed the next day. What kind of, as a software developer, who are your most valuable beta testers? You know, what kind of things do you value the most? What kind of information do you value the most? Do you look at the beta testers, the guy who's going to just go through all the buttons and make sure they work, or do you look for the beta testers that, okay, I'm going to try recording a song, and whatever happens, happens, and along the way? I mean, where do you get your most valuable information from, you know? Or do you need both? Do you need both type of?
We've got systematic regression testing in-house, and we consider this our job.
Right.
And what we want from the beta testers is daily use and workflow issues, features they're missing.
Right.
Things where we were actually thinking wrong. Even that happens.
No.
Okay. But the best and the most useful is actually people explaining why they need it this way and
having a good argument, because lots of times people have.
And actually, what's interesting these days is people just make a video. Something goes wrong in the software, they make a video and send us a video.
That's excellent.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, I used to beta test with Steinberg when it was on 3.0, and I used to send him videos, but he didn't get any reply except for ignore. We don't want to know about that bug. That's why we called him Steinberg.
So. You know, video is a great tool, though, for tech support. I was working on a GPS system to trigger some audio, and the system was wigging out, and I got my camera, and I videotaped it. And I said, look, this is what's happening. And they said that was the best thing because they could see the lights, and they could see what the box was doing. Yeah, so it's really good. Well, that's interesting.
You can really have some wicked time. They get Final Cut and start editing the front screen of the scene and say, look what it's doing.
That's right.
Get the code again.
Have you guys seen the new error report in Windows 7 yet?
No.
It has a mode that you record your steps. It's like video recording, but you actually hit record and you actually just go through what you're, you know, to reproduce the error, and actually spits out a HTML document with photos and all the steps that the user did to get from here to here to here to here.
Wow, if they would have spent all that engineering time just fixing bugs, it'd be better.
how was Windows 7?
Oh, it's amazing.
A lot of people say it's really good.
Yeah, everybody seems to like it.
I have like unlimited plug-in power now again. It's,
Oh, come on, tell me.
That's the i7.
Don't you really miss
me? I have a Core i7, too. Yeah. That does help a bit.
Yeah, definitely. He's got a smoking machine and a bunch of RAM, so that's nice.
Really quick, getting back to Studio One, which I assume runs on Windows 7. How's that? How's that for a segue? So now that you're showing this over at the NAMM show, are you close to doing an update? Or are you what's your release schedule as far as starting to implement some stuff? I mean, how is that going?
At the NAMM show, we will probably introduce 1.1.
Okay,
that's clean up from what was missing from 1.0, things like a key command editor, so people can do their custom key commands.
And that's in 1.1. Wow. And there's something called 8.03 that doesn't even have that.
Well, 1.0 had play, but 1.1 has stop.
Might as well get them off to a good start.
Yeah, exactly.
And
automation editing missed some basic functions.
I gotcha.
And they're there now. And the instrument player has effects now, so we can come up with sound sets that are much more interesting.
Great.
Can I ask you a question? When you sit down, it's like a layman's question, but either way, when you sit down with like a blank sheet, so to speak, and you're about to start building a sequencer, do you actually draw from obviously you draw from knowledge, but do you draw from blocks of code and have, okay, here's the, what you call it, engine, here's the automation engine, and we'll use part of this and modify it? Is that, you know, like, I'm just comparing it to music. You obviously come up with a chord progression you've done a bunch of times. Let me change this around or whatever. When you start a new program like this, would you say to yourself, well, I've got this code that does screen redraw.
No,
you don't use that?
No. It was rewritten from scratch.
From scratch.
Wow.
My partner,
it's a massive task.
My partner, Matthias, he started 2 years before that, actually, to write the foundation framework for user interface stuff and OS interfacing so that you can actually go cross-platform. But everything is really new.
Let me ask you a couple of really quick technical questions. Like, what are the minimum specs to run Studio One, like the artist version?
To be really happy with it,
yeah,
go for a Core 2 Duo.
Okay,
it runs on a P4. It even runs on P3s. Actually, to really enjoy it, you should have a modern computer.
Gotcha. Yeah. Which is totally fair.
One thing that Studio One does is it can switch between 64-bit and 32-bit processing, so you can mix your 32-bit plugins with 64-bit summing, for instance.
Nice.
And for that, you should have a faster computer.
Right.
Serious number crunching, that is.
So you're going to be at the PreSonus booth, and
right,
they're going to be doing demos of the of Studio One.
Yes, there will be, I think, 4 demos each day.
And
focusing on the process, there will be a band from Louisiana playing. We're going to record it. We're going to edit it and master it.
Oh, that's cool.
And we beam it up SoundCloud.
Wow.
Great.
From there.
That's really cool. Oh,
fantastic.
Well, I'm gonna stop by. I want to see that. That's really cool.
And there's a quiet room for in-depth demos for people who are to see more.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
So the program's called Studio One.
Right.
And it's PreSonus software. And there's 2 versions. You want to talk a little bit about the difference between the two?
Yes, there's the artist version, which is reduced feature set. Actually, not so reduced. It just doesn't load VST and audio unit plugins. But other than that, it's fully featured. All the internal plugins. No limit in track count.
And there's a ton of plugins, just so people know.
Right, and it's a very good set of plugins, actually, good sounding stuff. That's the feedback we're getting. This artist version is bundled with PreSonus hardware, and so you can get it for free if you buy PreSonus hardware.
Yeah.
And we have a very attractive upgrade price to go to the full version. that then gives you mastering, NVST, and audio units, basically.
I just want to encourage everybody out there, if you have the least bit of curiosity at all, go to Presonus, their website, which is presonus.com, look for software. And they've got a really good set of videos, and they've got a really – you can take a tour of it. And it's really something interesting to look at when you – you know, just when you thought nobody could bring a little bit of originality into the DAW market, you know, it's great to see a program like Studio One come out because they do some really cool things. It's the workflow. Just like I said, just the start page. From the start page on, you know you're in for something a little different.
I'm going to check it
so,
out.
So that's really good. Well, Wolfgang, thank you for telling us about Studio One, and we look forward to using it and seeing it grow and seeing it, I'm sure, develop in a pretty powerful force in the whole DAW market.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it.
Not a problem.
And thank you for Nuendo, too, because I
yes.
use that every
yes.
single day.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we
have a livelihood because of it. Thank you.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, Nuendo has had a big influence in the DAW market and has pushed not only just Steinberg, but actually pushed DigiDesign to keep to move forward too. Because,
which is a healthy thing.
Yeah, well, there was a time, and not so much anymore, but, you know, a few years ago where Nuendo, you know, you started seeing post-production houses, you know, talking about
the union
Nuendo.
Was actually giving lessons in Nuendo.
You saw that as being a really viable threat, and I think that really forced DigiDesign to wake up, and ultimately we all, you know, we all benefit because we all get the features we need and the features we want. So
we also I was talking to Wolfgang earlier, and we have to give a shout out to Thomas Vent, our friend,
yes,
who's been here and been here via Skype, but he's the one who told Wolfgang about the podcast originally, and Wolfgang told me he's actually been listening. Here, you can. Say I don't want to give you a testimonial.
Yeah, whenever I go to the gym, which is not so often, I listen to podcasts, and Audio Nowcast is always on here.
That's great.
Well, thank you.
So we had to have him on, but Thomas.
We have three people in the listen now. That's great.
And two of them are in Germany.
We're up to eight.
Oh, we're up to eight, all right.
That's great. Well, thank you, Wolfgang, for everything. Thank you for your contribution to music, and looking forward to Studio One. Really quick, we got to visit a little bit with Steve. Steve,
maybe I help out here because I met Steve when he was a beta tester
for
Nuendo.
Way back in the day.
Right.
Many moons ago.
He was the guy with the longest lists, and he could explain exactly what he wanted and why.
Yeah, he used to hate, like, every time I'd see him, he's like, okay, where's the list? Show me the list. Pull it out. Boom, it just hits the ground.
So, as a beta tester, I mean, obviously, you're probably the ones that they like, where you really use it, and you kind of, like, when you start a piece of software that you're going to beta test, do you have a plan of action, or you just start, okay, we're just going to start rolling?
Well, I'm just pretty crazy that I'll actually start using it on real projects when I probably shouldn't.
Right.
But I've done that like countless of times. Like when I first got Nuendo 1, I did a remix for Korn, and it was like probably the biggest thing I did at the time. And I was like, man, I shouldn't do with this. But I used Nuendo, and it, you know, worked great. But then I had problems. I'd have problems at night, and I'd email Wolfgang, like, this is not working. I need this to work. So I was in L.A. He was in Germany, and I'd go to bed. And I'd wake up in the morning. He'd have a new build for me. So it was like, you couldn't beat that. You know?
That's great.
Yeah, it was just amazing to have that kind of support, you know.
Did you do beta testing on Studio One? Did you work with
it? I played with it, yeah.
Actually, we invited him.
Yeah, he flew me over to Germany. And for like, what, a week or something?
A week, yes.
A week, yeah, just to tell him what sucked, what didn't suck, you know,
basically. Wow.
Focusing on editing.
Yeah. Just to make sure you had all the basics covered with the editing, you know. It does. I wish Steinberg would actually steal some of the editing features that are in Studio One, for sure.
From a beta tester, give us a little bit of rundown about what you think about Studio One and your impressions and some of the things that you think it really excels in.
Oh, the editing's really nice, but it's a little bit more simplistic. It's not as powerful as, say, Nuendo, but for the simple things, and it's just so much faster. Especially my favorite thing is the crossfade editor and the fade editor. You don't have to open up a separate window. You could do it straight on the main page in the range window and even draw the fade shape.
Wow,
without opening up a fade editor. Because I don't know how many times a day I have to open up a fade editor.
For that.
It's like 5,000 times a day I have to open up a fade editor, change the fade shape, and close it. Not in Studio One. You just do it on the main wing.
Yeah.
And
you know, people don't realize how, you know, important that is. Because fades,
massive,
man, are just – it's huge. You can really change – you know, just the character of that transition by having the right kind of fade.
And another thing, like I would love for anyone to steal off Studio One is they have a docked edit view at the bottom of the page. It's always docked. So whatever you select on the main arrange window, it's zoomed in on the bottom of the screen. You can edit it, full edit it and everything. So nice. Then you're not zooming in and zooming out all day, which I do 7,000 times a day also, you know.
And Pro Tools has about the clunkiest implementation
of
that
stuff.
It does.
You're always in whatever is the opposite of the mode you were hoping you were in.
And you're always like,
RT. In and out. And then you go, where am I?
There's one thing new window I really wish they'd implement. I'm sure everybody should, all applications. In the pool, they should have a button, find in Finder, please.
Yeah, we've got that.
You've got that, I know. But Nuendo, geez, forever. I mean, it's like
it has it in Media Bay only.
In Media Bay, you still can't open in Finder.
Yeah, you can.
And now we can open it.
I think it could in 4, yeah, I think so. I know it's definitely
four,
in
4, I didn't
5.
See
it.
Sounds like Steve's coming over to Bobby's studio. And give him some lessons. Well, so that's great. Well, it's great that you found, you know, some of that stuff and you want other software to use it.
Well, it's all about getting work done. It's all about just getting your projects done.
Exactly. There's so many tools to use.
Tell us a little bit about you do sound design, and what's like your tools of choice?
Nuendo, of course.
Right.
I've been using that since 1.0 alpha, I think it was, that Wolfgang sent it to me, like many years ago. But I couldn't really use that for post until probably about 3.0. You know, the first two versions, I did use it with 2.0, but it was a little rocky back then, you know. There's a lot of hoops you had to jump through. 3.0, you could definitely use it for post, and then when I went to 4.0, it was definitely like...
4.0 was a real strong upgrade.
Yeah, definitely.
And it much more efficient, much faster.
Oh, yeah, much faster.
Just night
and
day.
And then with 5 coming up in probably like 3-4 months, it's going to just take it on beyond that. So.
Good.
Well, that's great, and you're doing video games right now.
Yeah, I'm working on a game for EA right now, out of the UK.
The unnamed game that we cannot say what is.
They always have these NDAs.
Yeah, I know.
It's so ridiculous. It's like,
yeah, I know.
Especially when it's a part 2 or a part 3 of an existing title. It's like, it's no surprise. Are they going to jump from part 3 to part 7?
You can't even.
It's like.
You can't even acknowledge it existed.
No.
You know what, though? You're on the right podcast.
As long as my paycheck exists, that's all.
That's right. Because everybody here at one time, so what are you working on, Rob? Well, I'm working on something really cool, but I can't tell you anything. Yeah. You know? Everybody's, like, working on stuff that they can't talk about.
Yeah. When I was doing Gears of War, there was already all these articles on the internet that was coming out.
Right.
But we couldn't even acknowledge it existed. Yeah. They go, are you working on Gears of War? Just crickets. just couldn't say anything, you know?
Well, you know, I work on stuff over, you know, where I mix, and technically I can't even talk about the stuff I do on DVD releases that the movie's already been out and everybody knows the DVD's coming out, you know, but you can't acknowledge that the DVD's coming out.
You see, in movies, they go, yes, in a year and a half, so-and-so signed a deal with so-and-so, and they're going to spend like a year and a half we've known about Avatar for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, that he's working in New Zealand and just cranking it, you know.
Right.
Where was the sound done for that? Was that New Zealand?
New Zealand, yeah.
Really?
Over at the... Peter Jackson's place.
Those guys rock. That's a great film, but we'll talk about that later. But so how did you get into sound design? You were doing, obviously, you were doing some remixing.
Audio engineer. Came out from Ohio, like 20 years ago, actually, now. And it started off just being a sound engineer. And then had a buddy. He had a bunch of overflow work. And I was like, no, I'm not going to get into post until I'm like 35. Like, no way. I don't want to go. That's where engineers go to die.
Wait, what is that?
You know? And I was probably like 27 then or something like that. And then I went up to his house. I was brand new condo and his Mitsubishi Montero. And I was like, all right, I'm in. Yeah. Get me in. I'm in. So I started ghosting for him at night. We had like one Pro Tools system then only. Right. And so he'd work from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And I came in and worked from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And we just churned out these low budget, like, you know, Dolph Lundgren kind of films, you know, back then.
I know that well.
Yeah. So I just did that, ghosting, and then just, you know, got built up, and then finally he can actually introduce me to the clients who was actually helping him, and then got into the union, and then I started working at Paramount and Disney and all the big lots around town. So, and now I work out of my house, which is that's the main big lot to be at, really.
Really? Do you like being independent and working there?
Yeah, I prefer it. It's like, I like going to the lot sometimes just to at least interact with some people and have lunch. And that's kind of nice sometimes, you know? Sometimes I get kind of hermity, you know, when I sit at home for too long.
Right.
But I prefer work out of the house.
Do you ever have that symptom? Like, I know when I used to tour, you'd be on a gig and you'd be wanting to get home and for the gig to end, but all you can think about is the next gig that you're trying to get after you're done with that gig. I mean, is it like, well, you're on one gig doing all the sound design, you keep your eye open for the next gig?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I like having time off, though. I'd like to have 2 weeks off after every gig, but nowadays the gigs are getting shorter, so, unfortunately. Because back when I started, it's like we'd have like 4 or 5 sound designers or effects guys on one movie for like 4 or 5 months.
Right.
And nowadays it's like I did the last David Lynch movie, and it was like 2 weeks, do all the sound effects.
Wow.
And it's like, it's just budgets are shrinking. Wow. Unfortunately. And that's why I'm trying to do more video game work, because their budgets aren't shrinking as fast. They're like coming down like 5 years. They're like five years behind the post industry, but their budgets are shrinking though. But
wow.
Sound like it used to be.
More for less.
Sound like the Gears of War. I went to the release party for Gears of War. Oh my God. That was like the most insane party I've ever seen in my life.
But it's nice to make $150 million in a day.
It's crazy.
What about Modern Warfare?
Yeah, what about Modern Warfare? That's crazy.
Yeah, no, Halo, Modern Warfare. I mean, all these ones are just records.
Modern Warfare, that's a great sounding game.
Amazing.
I am amazed at the sound of that game. Those guys, whoever did it, do you guys know who did it?
It's Activision. I don't know anybody did it. Do you? It's an Activision title.
Well, Activision is in-house, so it must have been somebody outside.
Can't remember what's on the thing when you play.
They did a great job, though. I mean, there's the ambience, the backgrounds, just even just playing the game, the immersive experience of it. It's
amazing. Yeah, it's when things are blowing up and the tinnitus kicks in and everything gets muffled and bombs go off. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
no. I think what's great, though, in video games, especially if it's in-house, is, I mean, I know one of the games spent $25,000 just to record weapons.
Wow.
So they said, let's rent a tank. Let's rent, you know. And they spent a whole week. Because it's really the ammunition is expensive, and they just spent try this, and then you've got teams that are in house that could be on a project for over a year.
Yeah,
and you know, creating the sounds doesn't take a year, but they're like, hey, let's try this, let's try that,
right.
And they experiment. Fine. And not only that, what's interesting in gaming is a lot of the tool sets are created in house. So it's like somebody creating you a custom Pro Tool system or Nuendo to your specifications. So they're building the dev kit for that system
right. That's
proprietary to that company exactly the way you want it.
Wow.
So you sit there and say, hey, can I have something that crossfades or morphs for over distance? So as I move in on a sound, I could record 5 different variations from 5 different distances. And as I move into that sound, it crossfades between the mics.
Right.
So all of a sudden you have weapons. As a guy coming to you, you hear this really distant gunshot, just report down to the clicking of the actual mechanism as he's running towards you. It can crossfade between all those.
You know, what always amazes me is the real-time sound processing that these engines have, where you go inside, you fire a gun, sounds totally different than when you're outside and you fire that exact same gun, and you're like, it just blows me away. You know, you hear in Modern Warfare 2, if you're on some of those levels where there's a lot of buildings, you can almost hear, like, because I play with headphones on, because I can't play loud at the house, because I have to play after hours because it's, you know, M-rated. But you fire some of those guns, and in the headphones, you can, you know, you hear the verb, but you hear, like, the reverb of being in a canyon of buildings. It's just, to me,
And what's
amazing.
Cool about the reverb is they have obstructions and intrusions, where basically if you go behind a brick wall, it changes its reverb attributes.
Yeah, it's crazy. Anyhow, well, hey, thanks for stopping by, Steve.
No,
I appreciate it. And you got to keep us, you know, we'll have to have you back after you're done with this unknown game that you cannot talk.
Actually, I'm only allowed to see Rob once a year, though.
That's right. At NAMM. Or at Fry's. We run into each other at NAMM or Fry's. Our two homes away from home. Because we're both kind of hermity as you.
Yeah,
as you
we always promise we're going to hang out in between the NAMM show, but we never do.
Well, see, now you've got another stop. But because
absolutely.
I'd love that.
Come to sushi.
There you go.
Actually, yeah.
Fishy Fridays.
Fridays.
Okay.
We'll talk about that.
Let's do it.
But, I'd love for you to be able to share some of the stories that we talked about off the air and some of the trials and tribulations of what you're working on right now. So,
great.
All right, gang. Well, we're running out of time right now. And if you have any comments or questions for any of the panel, you can always reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Rob, I'm going to see you over at NAMM Show. You're working on anything interesting?
Working on a few interesting things, actually, which I can talk about in varying amounts. But for one thing, I think in the last podcast we talked about that we had just completed the ad campaign for Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs coming to home video.
Oh, yeah.
And it was dozens of different spots. I think we did talk about it. But anyway, I was wondering if we'd end up seeing it on the air. And all I know is it's been barraging the public. So it's I'm constantly turning around hearing something that sounds familiar, and then I realize, oh, that's another one of those spots. So I think we delivered 48 different versions. It was
that's
a
right.
massive campaign.
That's right. I remember what you're saying.
But so that's playing all over the place, which is always fun to hear. We're in production on two different albums at the moment, recording a bunch of live instruments and just old school tracking, which is really fun. Live horns, background singers, rhythm sections. It's all really good stuff. But the other thing I'm doing is I'm actually designing and building a website for an international songwriting competition. I won't go into much more detail than that, but within the next couple podcasts, it'll be live and the whole world will know about it.
Great.
And Bobby introduced me to the folks who are running the contest, and I've been studying the web stuff for years and building the chops and building the chops. But I definitely jumped in the deep end because this is one complicated website. But it's starting to come to life now, and Bobby's been helping me a lot with it. But it's actually coming to life.
We'll have to talk about it when it launches.
We will definitely talk about it because it's going to tie in with a lot of what we've been talking about. But so I built this thing from scratch. They had another website that that really wasn't up yet, so I just basically started over from scratch, and it's been an incredible experience, and it's only taken about 50 times as long as I thought it would take, so we're about right.
Wolfgang, we're going to see you over at the NAMM Show.
Right, I'm looking forward to a great show.
Right, you'll be at Pusanis.
First time that Studio One is at NAMM.
Excellent.
That's going to be excellent. I'm looking forward to
it. In the market. You can go buy it, actually.
Yeah, I'll definitely stop
by. How much
is
it? You didn't ask. How much runs it?
Street price in the U.S., $3.99.
That's really good.
That's pretty reasonable, especially when you literally they have tons of plugins that you get with this thing. I mean,
and if you get the artist version is the one that's bundled with hardware, right?
Right.
Do you know how much the upgrade is to the full version from that?
That's $199.
Wow! Yeah. Wow!
Crazy.
Buy the interface. Yeah, there's some. You can really work that deal.
Yeah. Buy an audio box and get the upgrade. You save money and go to an audio.
That's right. Absolutely. And Steve, well, we know you're working on something you can't talk about. Any other fun things that you just finished, or you just
just worked on a song spot for the A-Team trailer today.
Talk about the Grammy nomination.
Oh yeah, I got nominated for a Grammy this year.
You did?
Yeah. So for this Latin record I produced.
That's great.
Yeah, so I never thought I'd be nominated for a Grammy, you know. I'll take it. Latin or not, I don't care. I'll take it, you know.
Very cool. A Grammy is a Grammy. Yeah. You know?
Who was the artist?
Beto Cuevas. He's from the band Lelay. It's like the third biggest Latin rock group of all time, but I just met this guy at a party one day, and he's like, we should work on music. I'm like, okay. Did a record and got nominated. So
that's great. Wow. Yeah. So you're going to go to the show?
It was actually the Latin Grammys. It was in Vegas 2 months ago when I lost.
Oh.
So unfortunately. Should have left that part out, huh? They lost 2 months.
No, but you know what? This podcast won't be posted for a few days, so maybe by then you will have won. Isn't that how it worked?
That's right.
Okay.
But did you find the red carpet? Because that's one more than Andrew did.
That's right.
And Brandon, I know you're working on some cool stuff.
Yeah, we've got Clash of the Titans, which is fun. Lots of cool big monster sounds and stuff.
Yeah.
And what else? I don't know if I can mention this one. A new big project that might be coming in.
Okay.
I can play it safe.
Play safe.
Oh, you've given away too much. A new big project?
But maybe later on, once you start working on it, we'll talk about it.
Of course.
And Scott, I know you're always busy and doing some good things.
You know, Season of the Witch is done, and our trailer came out with the opening of Sherlock Holmes. So that's now, nice. I think it comes out March 19th.
Nice.
Finally, because I started it in March, and we just finished it. So it was a long run on one movie. Last week I started my next movie, The Death and Life of Charlie St. Cloud, with Zac Efron. So the girls will love it. It's actually a drama. But it's actually quite a great movie, and I think I finished that end of April.
I just want to put a plug in for Scott's work on Season of the Witch, because I went over to his studio with a friend of mine, and he was giving us a tour and played a little bit of it, and it sounded great. It sounded really good. There was a lot of layers, a lot of Foley with the heart effects and stuff, and the scene that you played was really good. So, nice.
Well, he had a whole year.
Luxury.
Luxury.
Bobby, what about you? Are you working on anything?
Yes, I am. I'm actually, I've got a couple of things, kind of diverse things going on. I told you a little bit about this sample library I'm starting now. So what I'm doing is a betaing a new contact and learning to write some of the scripts, because they've got a new scripting way of scripting in it. So that's what I've been studying the last couple of days, and been going out recording weird instruments. I won't say what instruments, but I've been recording weird instruments.
Great.
And doing setting up for this library thing. That's on the nerdy side of music. On the other nerdy side, completely sidebar, but I've just finished a Grey Box trading platform, because I'm into trading, fast day trading and
stocks,
whatever, but yeah, mostly US markets. So I've got this little application. I'm just starting to get to the point where I'm going to make it go live, where it, at the moment it's in testing, where I actually hit it and it will actually execute trades for me.
Wow.
So it trades you four pigs, a lamb, and a cow.
That's exactly.
Wow. And commodities.
Wait, get along a bunch of futures and look outside and have bunch of cows outside.
You program this?
Yes. It's actually just using really advanced macros in Excel.
Wow.
Along with quick keys and time. It's really quite simple.
Are we going to see you on late night TV selling the Bobby Somerville?
No. You might see me in that Madoff's cell.
Well, we've already heard him on Jim Cramer.
That's right.
He was on.
Yes, was he?
I heard him on there, yeah.
Yeah, I was.
He's a phone-in guest.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, that's some other thing. You know, the music industry doesn't always stick around for you. You have to do other things. And the music side of things, I'm doing a couple of music projects as well. I've got a couple of little fun things. I'm just starting to do a promo package for a network, basically, starting to do stuff. And I'm doing starting to do a CD library for an Australian library.
Remember when you told me not to buy Disney at 16?
Yeah, right, I did.
That's all I want to say.
Yeah, right. I told you not to buy the Disney at 16.
No, but, that's great. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
All right, gang. Well, if you have any comments or questions, once again, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also check us out on our MySpace and our Facebook pages, and eventually we will see it. I can't say we'll see it right away, but eventually we will see it, so feel free to keep posting. You can always send us the email. Like I said, we'll be at the NAMM show, so if you see any of the guys, be sure to stop them and say hello. And Wolfgang, thank you once again for joining us.
Yeah.
And Steve, thank you.
Yeah.
And for myself and all the guys, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Somerville. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.